So we are back in Genesis chapter 31 this morning, and it's been a couple of weeks since we have been in this story, so I want to back up to get the context and start back in verse 1, even though we went into chapter 31 last time. I want to start back in verse 1 of chapter 31. Now Jacob heard the words of Laban's sons, saying, "Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what was our father's, he has acquired all this wealth." And Jacob saw the countenance of Laban, and indeed it was not favorable toward him as before. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your fathers and to your family, and I will be with you." So Jacob sent and called Rachel and Leah to the field to his flock, and said to them, "I see your father's countenance, that it is not favorable toward me as before. But the God of my father has been with me. And you know that with all my might I have served your father. Yet your father has deceived me, changed my wages 10 times, but God did not allow him to hurt me. If he said thus, 'The speckled shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore speckled. And if he said thus, 'The streaked shall be your wages,' then all the flocks bore streaked. So God has taken away the livestock of your father and given them to me. And it happened at the time when the flocks conceived that I lifted my eyes and saw in a dream, and behold, the rams which leaped upon the flocks were streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted. Then the angel of God spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Jacob,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift up your eyes now and see. All the rams which leap on the flocks are streaked, speckled, and gray-spotted, for I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed the pillar, and where you made a vow to me. Now arise, get out of this land, and return to the land of your family.' Then Rachel and Leah answered and said to him, 'Is there still any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not considered strangers by him? For he has sold us, and also completely consumed our money. For all these riches which God has taken from our father are really ours and our children's. Now then, whatever God has said to you, do it.' Then Jacob rose and set his sons and his wives on camels, and he carried away all his livestock and all his possessions which he had gained, his acquired livestock which he had gained in Padan Aram, to go to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Now Laban had gone to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the household idols that were her father's. And Jacob stole away, unknown to Laban the Syrian, in that he did not tell him that he intended to flee. So he fled with all that he had. He arose and crossed the river, and headed toward the mountains of Gilead." I believe what we have here is a very good example of the kind of thing that we actually often do, which is to say one thing and then go out and do the opposite. It is not that Jacob did the opposite of what he said exactly, because he was obeying God in going. I am not sure, however, that he was obeying God in the way in which he went. God did not tell Jacob to go without telling Laban. And it would seem from the results, as we will see in a moment, that this was not the wisest way to have gone about it. It would also seem, from Jacob's own testimony later on, that he did so out of fear. And in this, he was sort of following in the footsteps of his father and his grandfather, who acted out of fear of the kings of Egypt and of the Philistines, and walked in a measure of deceit, which compromised their witness and generally made trouble for everybody. Jacob has just gotten through saying, God has done all this for me. God appeared to me, that God actually came to him, sent him an angel in a dream, and told him, "I am looking out for you. So I am giving you the livestock that are being denied to you by Laban. He's trying to cheat you, but I've seen what he's doing to you. I'm on top of the situation, and I'm giving you all of this. So, therefore, you can trust me. And it's time for you to go back home to your father." So, Jacob obeyed God, much like Abraham and Isaac, but with a measure of fear of man that I think he was walking in here. And this continued to characterize the descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. If you'll recall the time in which they walked in the wilderness, they were continually afraid that they were going to be They were going to starve. They were going to die of thirst. When they got to the land of Canaan, they actually failed to inherit the land because they were afraid of the giants. They didn't trust the Lord. So I think this was an example of, despite everything that Jacob had seen and that that God had demonstrated that he was, that God was on top of Laban. He didn't have to worry about what Laban was going to do to him. Still, Jacob walked in fear. It is interesting to me that we're told of two things that happened. Rachel stole the household idols. Jacob stole away. Those are actually the same word in Hebrew, not just in English. And it says to me that they were both walking in the same, to some extent anyway, Jacob less so than Rachel, but to some extent they were both walking in the same wrong spirit. There are two wrong attitudes that we can have toward the world and toward the things that are of the world. One is to fear them, the other is to lust after them. And unfortunately, Jacob demonstrated one, namely fearing man, in sneaking off rather than being up front with Laban and saying, God has told me to go back home, so I'm going, thank you very much, and goodbye. Rachel demonstrated the other mistake. And this that Rachel did is not, I think, a trivial thing at all. I believe it probably resulted in her death. Directly or indirectly, I don't know. Some people think that Jacob himself basically consigned later on. We'll see that he said something that may have contributed. I don't know. You know, we don't really know what sort of power such pronouncements have. But just to focus for a moment on Rachel's attitude, I think it also shows us something very important about the human heart. And this is part of the reason I wanted to read the passage that went before. Because you have Rachel and Leah who are concurring, yes, our father has been a rat. He has, he didn't care about us. He didn't care about his daughter's happiness. Married them off to the same man, knowing that there was going to just be nothing but trouble and grief to come of that, I'm sure. And he had a brain. But he didn't care. He wanted to get 14 years free work out of Jacob, so he did it. And then, thinking nothing of providing for them or their children, he attempted to do Jacob out of his wages regarding the livestock, confiscating the animals that were supposed to have been Jacob's, and then continually changing his wages in an attempt to circumvent what God was clearly doing in having the animals bear offspring that were in line with whatever the wages of the week happened to be. So they saw that their father was dishonest, did not fear God, and did not even care about them. So Rachel stole her father's gods. And when you think about this, how much sense does this make? It's very much like Amaziah, king of Israel, who defeated the Edomites in battle and then set up their idols and worshiped them. Why do we want to be like the very people by whom we are mistreated? Why do we want to value what they value and pursue what they pursue, when we can see the results of it and we acknowledge ourselves these things are bad? You know, most people are like, yeah, the world stinks, everything's wrong, people hate each other, there's no kindness, there's no honesty. And then they go out and pursue the very things that result in those consequences, rather than turning away from them. And they do it because of the lusts of the flesh. I am sure that Rachel probably took these household idols. The word is teraphim, and it apparently refers to a fairly small image because of the way she was able to conceal it. It was probably valuable. It probably had intrinsic worth. Idols were usually decorated with silver and gold. I have to think that she probably felt like this was sort of the final straw. It says that Laban had gone to shear his sheep. It's interesting to me because I see the parallel between Laban and Nabal. As we saw 2 weeks ago, their names are the reverse of one another. Nabal being another man in the Bible who had a sheep shearing event and withheld any of the good from it from David. Sheep shearing was apparently an occasion of feasting in the ancient world, a time when people were in an especially good mood and they would just sort of invite the whole family. Absalom used such an occasion to invite all his brothers. Of course, his intent was murder, but The point being, it was, I guess, probably traditional for somebody to invite their whole family to a sheep shearing. Well, it would appear that Laban didn't invite Jacob or Rachel, Leah, or any of them. He just went off to enjoy himself. And I'm sure that this left Rachel feeling like, okay, that's it. You don't care about me. You know, you just married me off and consumed all my money, and so I'm going to take what's mine. I'm going to get it for myself. And this is a recurring pattern that we can find throughout the scriptures, which are written for our learning. It's for us to understand why these people made the choices, what the right ones were, what the wrong ones were, and what the consequences of those choices were. And when we grasp, when we covet, the Bible says that is idolatry. It is putting something ahead of God. You shall have no other gods before me. And in this case, it was very graphically illustrated because what Rachel stole was an idol. But in fact, everything that we steal is an idol, because the crime of stealing originates in covetousness. You do not steal if you do not have a desire for that which is not yours, which you are not lawfully entitled. Exception might be the people who steal just, you know, to keep from starving, which the Bible actually talks about. That's a kind of a different situation. But it's clear that Rachel was not getting ready to starve. She coveted what was her father's, and it was not a good thing. It was an evil thing. It was the very reason that Laban was the way he was. He did not fear God. He was dishonest. He was deceitful. And he was effectively abusive to his family because he was an idolater. And so Rachel stole the very thing that was effectively the origins of her own sorrow. And this is what we do when we go after the things of the world. The Bible says, Paul says in Timothy, that those who will be rich fall into temptation and snare, many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. I'm trying to think of how that connects, but there's part of that says that they pierce themselves through with many sorrows. And that's exactly what's happening when we grasp after those things. We're doing the enemy's work for him by running ourselves through. Rachel did the enemy's work for him by grasping, by coveting, and by stealing these idols, and totally compromised whatever witness they had to Laban. Because I'm sure that even though he wasn't able to find the idols, he nonetheless thought, well, I know they must have taken them. And so they didn't leave him with a pure witness of those that were going to worship the one true God and were going to be separate, but as those that had some affinity, at least, for what he had an affinity for. The gods represent something more than just some wrong idea of what deity is. I believe that these idols represent, as the Bible refers to in another place regarding the idolatry of the children of Israel, it says they rejoiced in the works of their own hands. It is anything that I made and that I can control, that I set up to be the point of my life, that which I return to and in which I find meaning and fulfillment. If it's anything but God, it's idolatry. And that's what Laban had at the center of his life. So, Rachel stole the idols, Jacob stole away, and Laban, verse 22, was told on the third day that Jacob had fled. Then he took his brethren with him and pursued him for 7 days' journey, and he overtook him in the mountains of Gilead. But God had come to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said to him, "Be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad." So Laban overtook Jacob. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mountains, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the mountains of Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What have you done that you have stolen away unknown to me, and carried away my daughters like captives taken with a sword? Why did you flee away secretly and steal away from me and not tell me? For I might have sent you away with joy and songs, with timbrel and harp, and you did not allow me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Now you have done foolishly in so doing." I do not accept Laban's testimony that what Jacob did was foolish, but I do think that it is instructive that even when Laban already had been provoked by not having been told, and chased after Jacob, and was very much in a frame of mind to have at least given him a black eye, so to speak, God intervened and said to Laban, "No, if you know what's good for you, you will just be hands off." And Laban had enough sense not to go against the word of God. The same thing could have happened if Jacob had been up front with Laban and told him what he was doing. God could have restrained him. And then they would have saved themselves all this work and lather chasing around the desert. I think that that's probably what would have happened. The Bible says when a man's ways please the Lord, he makes even his enemies to be at peace with him. So this all could have, I think all of this extra work probably could have been avoided. And it might have even prevented Rachel from having the opportunity of stealing the idols. Don't know. It is in my power to do you harm. But the God of your father spoke to me last night, saying, be careful that you speak to Jacob neither good nor bad. This is a funny kind of almost contradictory statement. Laban says, it is in my power to do you harm, but God told me not to. Well, it really wasn't in his power to do Jacob harm. God told Laban, essentially, if you know what's good for you, don't speak to Jacob either good or bad. Had Laban attempted to do Jacob harm, it would have been Laban who had been destroyed, not Jacob. So the world likes to think, and they like to act like they have power against the people of God. And Satan likes to huff and puff and say, I'm going to blow your house down. You know, and Laban, in his pride, at least wanted to say, I could harm you, but I'm not going to. And this is really, if Jacob had understood this as well as Laban did, having been spoken to directly by God, Jacob would have had a better perspective on Laban. He would not have feared him. You know, Jesus said, do not fear those who can only kill the body, and after that have no more that they can do. Fear him who, after he is killed, has power to cast into hell. So he's saying, your fear is misdirected. You're thinking about what men are going to do to you, not what God is going to do to you if you do not accept his salvation, if you do not walk in the obedience of faith. And Jacob demonstrated the fear of man, and Rachel demonstrated the lack, I'm afraid, of the fear of God. And in so doing, they, once again, they did themselves out of blessings. God was still blessing Jacob, but I'm sure that at least Rachel's part in it, she missed out because of not fearing God and because of coveting and stealing these idols. And once again, compromised the witness in verse 30. And now you have surely gone because you greatly long for your father's house, but why did you steal my gods? Interesting that when the author, Moses, I guess, refers to these objects earlier, objectively, he calls them teraphim, the root word of which is actually unknown, but it refers to the idols as objects. When Laban speaks, he refers to them as my gods. That is the same word that is elsewhere. It is Elohim. It is the same word that is used elsewhere to refer to the true God. So it shows Laban's heart. It wasn't just, well, I have some valuable trinkets that you carried off that aren't yours, so I want them back. It's like his whole thing. I mean, if the idols had not been stolen, it's possible he would have been just like, well, I knew he was going to go sooner or later. Oh, well, you know, good riddance. But Jacob had something that he really wanted back. It was at the center of his world. And you can actually see that, in especially in America today. David last year was commenting on having learned for the first time about Black Friday. He said this is apparently called Black Friday from the color that covetousness turns the soul as people beat and trample one another to get a good price on their gods. I thought he had mistyped it and he meant goods, but he actually did mean gods. And I think that that's an appropriate characterization, because you place something at the center of your life. Jesus said, where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Whatever you place the value on, that becomes effectively your God, whatever it is. It doesn't, that's not always a thing. Sometimes it could be a relationship or an idea of yourself, your own goodness. That's some people's God. It could even be a religion. You know, you can substitute a religion, put that in the place of God. I'm faithful to all of these things. Anything can be an idol depending on where it is placed. If it's placed at the center of your world, then it becomes effectively your God. And that is the word that Laban used to refer to these idols, because that's what they were to him. They were God to him. And that's the God that he really cared about. Then Jacob answered and said to Laban, "Because I was afraid, for I said, perhaps you would take your daughters from me by force. With whomever you find your gods, do not let him live. In the presence of our brethren, identify what I have of yours and take it with you." For Jacob did not know that Rachel had stolen them. And this is what I referred to earlier when I said I don't know how much Jacob's words had to do with Rachel's later death in childbirth. It's hard to say. Bible doesn't really tell us. But certainly it is a very bad position to be in, effectively to be pronouncing this judgment on his own wife. And I think that this shows something about his relationship with Rachel that he didn't know. And probably, you know, I think we can see later on in the story of Jacob how really with his whole family, he wasn't on top of things the way that he should have been. And it's our job to see to those in our care, whoever the Lord has given us to be responsible for, younger siblings. In the case of husbands, they're responsible for their wives. Husbands and wives responsible for their children. That's job number one. And if you're not doing that, then don't even think about job number two. And I think that it shows something about, it would appear that, well, I'll go ahead and read this, verse 33, and Laban went into Jacob's tent, into Leah's tent, and into the two maids' tents, but he did not find them. Then he went out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. So apparently Jacob, Rachel, and Leah all had their own tents. Maybe this had something to do with the fact that Jacob, having two wives, didn't have he obviously preferred Rachel, but maybe just to maintain appearances, neither one of them actually lived with him. He went back and forth between them. I don't know. So you could just see this as a consequence of the wrong that was done in Jacob ending up having two wives, which, of course, is almost always associated with some kind of trouble in the Old Testament. Even though it was allowed, it was certainly not encouraged. Now Rachel had taken the household idols, put them in the camel's saddle, and sat on them. And Laban searched all about the tent, but did not find them. And she said to her father, "Let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise before you, for the manner of women is with me." And he searched, but did not find the household idols. I think it's interesting, without getting too, you know, graphic, if you realize what Rachel was referring to here. Under the law of Moses, anything that a woman sat on during this period would have been unclean. Now, I can imagine that it was probably already regarded as such in the culture. And that may have even more to do with the fact, with the reason that Laban didn't search there, than the fact that Rachel wouldn't get up, that he wouldn't touch it. So that, but that in its own way was very appropriate, because the Lord in the prophets actually said, this is how you ought to regard your idols, as a thing that is unclean and that you would not touch, that you would say, get it out of here. You know, throw it away. It's garbage. It's filthy. It's something that you would not touch with a 10-foot pole, as we would say today. And unfortunately, she didn't see it that way. If she had, she never would have touched it in the first place. But in this, and it may not have even been true, you know, she may have made it up, but in any case, it ended up being a sort of an appropriate analogy for the way these things are in the sight of God. You know, we see them as so desirable, and God sees them as utter filth, you know, just ought have nothing to do with those things that are of the world and are the source of all the trouble, really. Okay, so verse 36, then Jacob was angry and rebuked Laban, and Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass? What is my sin that you have so hotly pursued me? although you have searched all my things, what part of your household things have you found? Set it here before my brethren and your brethren, that they may judge between us both. These 20 years I have been with you. Your ewes and your female goats have not miscarried their young, and I have not eaten the rams of your flock. That which was torn by beasts I did not bring to you, I bore the loss of it. You required it from my hand, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. There I was. In the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, and my sleep departed from my eyes. Thus I have been in your house 20 years. I served you 14 years for your 2 daughters and 6 years for your flock, and you have changed my wages 10 times. Unless the God of my father, the God of Abraham and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely now you would have sent me away empty-handed. God has seen the affliction and the labor of my hands and rebuked you last night. I don't think that this diatribe of Jacob's really made that much of an impression on Laban, as we'll see from his response. But it does tell us something, gives us a window into the last 20 years of his life. And when you think about it, 20 years is a very long time. That's 2/3 of the time that I've lived so far. And obviously they were not exactly, this was not a pleasure trip for Jacob that he took into Syria. I don't think that God ever intended for Jacob to have to work for a slave driver like Laban. I think that Jacob brought it on himself. You know, we know that God always chooses the easiest way. And if Jacob had trusted God instead of using deceit to try to get the blessing for himself, I believe that he could have continued on in the land of Canaan. He might have had to go out to get a wife, but he could have been like Isaac. Isaac enjoyed all the blessings of God, as far as we can tell, basically his entire life. He never had the struggles that either Abraham, certainly not the struggles that Jacob had. And I think it's because he trusted God. Jacob, the point in his favor was, he thought the blessing was something to be desired. He cared about it and he went after it. Unfortunately, he went after it the wrong way. And so he wound up having to reap what he sowed many times over by working this 20 years for this deceitful slave driver who made his life miserable. And the fact is, God will let us choose a harder way. If you essentially say no to God, God puts a choice in front of you and says, this is what you need to do, and you say, no, I don't want to do that, then God will be like, okay, if you want to do it the hard way, we can do that too. So the next thing, it's not going to be easier, it's going to be harder. And Jacob, because he did not want to trust God, he wanted to grasp for the blessing and try to get it by deceit, or he let his mother talk him into it, whatever way you want to look at it. He was quite a ready conspirator. He wound up having to spend this 20 years working for Laban and learning things the hard way. You know, yes, probably he got to the same point at the end, but didn't need to go through all that to get there. And Laban answered and said to Jacob, these daughters are my daughters, and these children are my children, and this flock is my flock. All that you see is mine. But what can I do to these, what can I do this day to these my daughters or to their children whom they have borne? Now therefore come, let us make a covenant, you and I, and let it be a witness between you and me. So Jacob took a stone and set it up as a pillar. Then Jacob said to his brethren, gather stones. And they took stones and made a heap, and they ate there on the heap. Laban called it Jigar Sahadutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. Incidentally, those two words mean the same thing, heap of witness. Why this particular detail is included, I'm not exactly sure, but one thing we can kind of note is that Jacob and Laban were apparently still speaking different languages at this point. The Jigar Sahadutha is Aramaic, and Galeed is Hebrew. So it may very well be that Jacob continued to speak the language of his forefathers all the time that he sojourned in Syria, and this was part of his keeping the distinct identity that set him apart, and sort of let Laban and the Syrians know, I'm not from here, I'm not staying here, I'm going somewhere else. And that's true, I think, that's a principle we can apply today too, that even our language ought to set us apart. As it did Peter, who, though he denied Jesus, was still identified by his speech. Out of the abundance of the heart, of course, the mouth speaks. And so we ought to be okay with being different, with being singled out as, oh, well, that person's not really part of our group. All the time that Jacob sojourned in Syria, he never really became integrated with the, apparently with the culture, because he was always heading somewhere else, as we are too. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between you and me this day. Therefore its name was called Galeed. Also Mizpah, because he said, may the Lord watch between you and me when we are absent one from another. If you afflict my daughters, or if you take other wives besides my daughters, although no man is with us, see, God is witness between you and me. Then Laban said to Jacob, here is this heap, and here is this pillar which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap and this pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us. And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Laban was here trying to make the case that the God of Abraham and Nahor, the God of their father, Terah, was all one and the same. Which was not in fact true. So far as we can discern, Abraham's father was probably an idolater. And there does not seem to be any evidence that the worship of the true God persisted in the family of Nahor. It at least had not persisted with Laban, not in a pure way, because the gods that he cared about were the ones he'd made himself. So it was at the least very adulterated. And Jacob, I think, is showing faithfulness here by swearing by the fear of his father Isaac. That is specifically that understanding of God that persisted through the line of Abraham and Isaac. Not just any God, a God, some God, you know, it's all one. Your God and my God were just different ways of describing the same person. It is important to define, especially in our interactions with the world, who are we talking about? Sometimes it's not even enough to say Jesus. Sometimes we have to define who we're talking about. The Jesus of the Bible. You know, we're talking about the Son of God. We're talking about the one who rose from the dead. The one who said, if you don't take up your cross and follow after me, then you can't be my disciple. So it's very tempting to want to just slide in with the world and play along with whatever they want to say. Oh yeah, God, I know God. I've got a thing going with the man upstairs. I'm all good with the, you know, the great cosmic power. And there's a lot of different ways that people have of trying to mush all this together so that they're not threatened by it. But we're here as light and salt, which can be both of them in certain situations uncomfortable. And once again, we have to be comfortable with that. We have to be comfortable with being different, with being sort of like Mordecai, the stick in the mud, who says, no, we're not talking about the same God. This is not Allah. This is not the God of Mormonism. This is not the God of Jehovah's Witnesses. This is the God of the Bible. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The one who has continually revealed himself in all these different ways and shown us what he is like. And he's not represented by little pieces of clay that you covered with silver and gold. He is the eternal and self-existent one to whom we are accountable. And so the lines have to be drawn. But yet, God is able to cause even our enemies to be at peace with us. And so despite the poor choices of Jacob and Rachel, God did achieve the result of Laban's being more or less peaceable with them and making this covenant. Then Jacob offered a sacrifice on the mountain and called his brethren to eat bread, and they ate bread and stayed all night on the mountain. And early in the morning Laban rose and kissed his sons and daughters and blessed them. Then Laban departed and returned to his place. And thus far is the story of Jacob, which we will probably take up again in a month or so.